All right, thank you all for your patience. We are ready to begin today's Finance Committee meeting. And our first order of business is going to be approval of the agenda. So everyone can take a look at the agenda for today. You see that we have two items. An amendment to the current year operating and capital budget, as well as consideration of the FY 2020 budget. Can I have a motion to approve the agenda? And is there a second, member of the committee? There is a second. All in favor? Aye. Any opposed?
Man, we need a real second.
I'm not on the committee.
Corbett's on the committee.
Corbett's on the committee.
Corbett's on the committee.
Yep. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for stating that clearly to my colleagues.
All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? The ayes have it. Okay, we also need to approve the minutes from the February 28th Finance Committee meeting. Is there a motion? Mr. Price, would you like to move it?
Yes, I move it, sir.
Thank you, sir. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? The ayes have it. Now, thank you. Before we get into our presentation, I'd like to just go over again our objectives. The amendment, the first item to the FY19 operating and capital budget, this requires an additional $1.15 million in subsidy for the recently approved labor agreement with Local 922. The capital budget amendment will increase the FY19 capital budget by $154 million, but will not require additional subsidy from the contributing jurisdictions. The additional funding will allow for the advancement of key capital projects while keeping our long-term plan for capital spending the same. Next, the committee will be asked to adopt the FY20 operating budget and the FY20-25 capital improvement program so that we can send this along to the full board for final approval. The operating budget put forward today includes some customer improvements, including extensions on the yellow and red lines and enhancement to Metro products and passes, including lowering the prices for some of those. And the $1.5 billion capital budget represents a continued focus, a strategic focus on safety and reliability. So for the first item, the consideration of the amendment, that will just be a matter for the committee in terms of voting. Now, that's Mr. McMillan, Mr. Goldman, Mr. Price, and myself. And then for the operating budget, we operate in committee of the whole. So with that, I would like to turn it over to Mr. Anasike to begin our discussion.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Yetunde Olubide. I serve as the Managing Director of the Office of Management and Budget Services. This morning, I'll present proposed amendments to the FY19 Operating Budget and Capital Improvement Program to fund recent labor agreements and additional capital improvements. In March of 2018, the Board of Directors approved the FY19 operating and capital budgets. The approved operating budget subsidy was $1.008 million. Thereafter, in June, the Board subsequently amended the FY19 operating budget for rail and bus service improvements with an increase of $5 million. In November the same year, the board further amended the FY18 and 19 operating budgets to cover incremental collective bargaining agreement costs with Local 2 and Local 689 arbitration award and additional metro access costs. The FY19 portion of this amendment was $65 million. In February, Metro reached a contract settlement with Local 922, the impact of which increases the budget by $1.15 million in FY19. This table shows how contributions are allocated among the jurisdictions. In total, the FY19 subsidy is $1,080,800,000, inclusive of previously approved amendments, and this this local 922 request. On the capital improvement program, through January, Metro invested $743 million in capital projects, which is more than what was invested in FY15. We are forecasting that investments will be $1.43 billion or $154 million higher than budget. The key reasons for the increase in the FY19 investment forecast include approved track access planning and efficiency, which has increased production for track and structures rehabilitation programs, platform reconstruction and its accompanying station improvements, as well as acceleration of Potomac Yards, has current investments at $85 million above budget. Purchase of the new headquarters in D.C., as well as expenses to project management and support, added another $103 million to the budget. It is possible that Metro could exceed this forecast, which will require staff to come back to the board. Metro has identified $15.5 billion of capital investment needs over the next 10 years. These needs were scoped and turned into projects, but as scopes and schedules are established, the program forecast will be updated. The major drivers of the change to this year's forecast include fully scoping the platform program, award of a design-build contract for the Potomac Yard Station, as well as acceleration of the office consolidation program. Dedicated funding provides Metro the flexibility to manage annual cash flow requirements with no impact to the jurisdictions. This slide shows changes by investment category, with aforementioned increases in track and structures, stations and passenger facilities, as well as business support. Metro's six-year FY20 to 25 capital improvement program total is unchanged at $9.2 billion. Acceleration of platform rehabilitation and office consolidation initiatives means that the first three program years will increase by $541 million, while the last three decrease by the same amount. The seven-year program, including FY19, increases by $154 million, which will be funded with debt, federal grants, and proceeds from asset sales. There is no change to jurisdictional contributions over the FY19 to 25 period. This slide shows fund sources to cover additional investments. As you can see, the jurisdictions will not be required to fund any additional investments. Federal grants, reimbursable projects, and additional debts and other sources such as FTA interest on assets will fund the $154 million increase. Staff recommends approval of the FY19 budget amendments to fund the local 922 Union of International Brotherhood of Teamsters labor agreement and additional capital investments. That concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Alumide. Since this has been previewed at previous Finance Committee meeting, I think we can probably get through this quickly, but are there any questions on the technical details of how this works? And if not, we can move to a motion. Mr. Goldman.
Thank you. I don't have any question on the operating budget part dealing with the union. I do have a question just on the capital part, and it actually deals with the prior slides showing capital funding. This slide is also attachment B of the resolution before us today. And on the right-hand column, I understand that the $154 million does not require any further contribution from the jurisdictions, and I understand what federal funding means, and I assume reimbursable projects are predominantly the money that will come from the city of Alexandria and the state of Virginia for the
Potomac Yards
project. The other one, the other $101 million, the big piece, could you break down how much of that is additional debt funding and how much of it is so-called other sources, and what are those other sources? If you could give us that kind of a breakdown so we have a better understanding of what's, what these numbers mean, that would be appreciated.
Thank you for your question, Mr. Goldman. To break down the $101 million, right now I have about $16 million in disposed assets, both real estate and non-real estate assets. Another $5 million in Metro 2025 grants, as well as utilization of the line of credit for the balance.
So it's roughly $65 million, which are other sources, so-called asset sales, and that would give you about
36 in debt.
Million would be the amount that's going to be financed, debt financing.
Thereabout.
Is that correct? Now, is that subject to any issues that may happen after this meeting, or are those firm numbers for FY19 at this point?
Those are firm numbers for FY19 at this point.
Thank you. That's it.
Okay. Any other questions? Members of the committee first, since everyone is here. Anyone? All right. This time, a motion would be in order.
So moved.
All right. So Mr. Price has gone ahead and moved staff's recommendation to amend the FY 2019 operating and capital budget to reflect the agreement with Local 922, as well as the additional $154 million in non-jurisdiction responsibility capital improvements. Is there a second? Thank you. Any further discussion? All those in favor, please say aye. Members of the committee only. Aye. Any opposed? The ayes have it. 4-0. Thank you all very much. Thank you, Ms. Illumide. And I think we'll turn it back over to Mr. Anasike for our next item.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman, and good morning to the committee. Our goal today is to review with the committee the results of the public hearing on Metro's FY 2020 proposed budget, and then to seek committee acceptance of the report on equity analysis and approval of the FY 2020 budget recommendation. With respect to the public outreach, as part of WMATA's outreach and public participation process, staff distributed over 100,000 brochures and customer surveys, and held three public hearings, one in Virginia, one in Maryland, and one in the district, to review the proposed FY 2020 budget and the strategic plan. A total of 33 individuals testified at the three events. In addition, WMATA received over 5,800 comments on the proposed budget. Overall, the responses from writers to the proposed budget has been generally positive. As the committee will expect, some of the services and fare proposals, such as extending the Yellow Line service to Greenbelt and the $2 weekend flat fare Metro Rail, were viewed more favorably than the others. And as required by law, WMATA conducted an equity analysis which concluded that the proposed service and fare changes do not have a disparate impact on minorities or cause a disproportionate burden on low-income population. I will now, before I do that, in 2017, WMATA developed a plan to keep Metro safe, reliable, and affordable, in other words, KIMSRA. Based on KIMSRA, WMATA has completed SafeTrack, accomplished Back to Good, and implemented the Rush Hour Promise. The proposed capital plan for the next year, and the next 6 years sticks to the 10-year, $15 billion plan, contending KIPSRA to improve system safety, system reliability, and to reduce long-term operating costs. Last but not least, the FY 2020 proposed budget includes additional management actions to control cost and grow ridership in order to comply with the mandated 3% cap on annual operating subsidy. I will turn it over to Tom to discuss the cap on the budgets.
Thank you, Dennis. So as the committee knows, Metro plans to invest about $9 billion in the system through the capital program over the next 6 years. That planned investment is targeted at safety, state of good repair, system preservation projects, and programs that will improve the safety and reliability of the system for Metro's customers, employees, and for the region. As was discussed in the previous presentation, there have been several changes to the capital program and capital budget since the budget was proposed in the fall. As a result of the acceleration of projects and other schedule changes, Metro is now forecasting that capital investment will total more than $1.5 billion in FY20 compared to the previous forecast from the fall of $1.35 billion. Specifically, consistent with the previous presentation, forecast investment in rail cars goes up in FY20 as a result of delivery shifting from FY19. Rail systems increase as a result of acceleration of power and train control programs. Stations and passenger facilities increase due to the addition of the Potomac Yard Station and the full scoping of the platform program for this summer. And business support increases as a result of the office consolidation program and as we ramp up capital program development and delivery. Overall, Metro's capital investment over the next 6 years remains at $9.2 billion. And again, the proposed plan from November, shown in the dark blue, assumed a slower ramp-up of investment over the six-year period. We're now forecasting much more substantial investment in the first few years of the program. And again, this is largely not due to increases in cost. This is changes in project schedules and the further development, evaluation, and project development of projects that in the previous version of the plan were rough order of magnitude estimates based on capital needs rather than capital projects. And finally, Metro's capital program delivery has ramped up dramatically since FY15, when just over $700 million was invested through the capital program. We're now forecasting to be over $1.4 billion this fiscal year and $1.5 billion next fiscal year. That has had direct results on safety, reliability, and improvement in our service for customers. We expect that will continue as the capital program delivery ramps up and as additional projects get underway. Thank you, Dennis.
Thanks, Tom. Shifting back to the operating budget, the slide that you're looking at lays out the FY 2020 operating budget process, which staff reviewed with the committee last November. So as the committee will recall, the FY 2020 capped operating subsidy is established by multiplying fiscal year 2019's adjusted operating subsidy by 3%. Staff then adds any legislatively excluded cost to determine the total annual subsidy for fiscal year 2020. As a reminder, the general manager's recommended budget before the committee today does not increase fares, it does not cut service, and as I mentioned a few minutes ago, stays within the mandated 3% subsidy growth cap. Within that cap, the recommended budget maintains WMATA's better rush hour promise. It reduces pass prices and adds a late night partnership that is focused on late night walkers. The recommended budget also includes two new service initiatives to grow ridership, which I will describe in more detail in the next two slides. The first service proposal extends Yellow Line service to Greenbelt, which means that Yellow Line trains will no longer turn back at Mount Vernon Square during peak periods or 4,000 during off-peak periods. This change will grow ridership by 1.7 million new trips and improve service for more than 12 million current riders each year. And similar to the elimination of Grosvenor Tambach, the second service proposal extends the Red Line trains to Glenmont, thereby increasing service frequency to Forest Glen, Wheaton, and Glenmont. Running all Red Line trains to Glenmont is projected to grow ridership by 600,000 new trips and improve ridership for almost 3.5 million current riders on that segment each year. So, with respect to legislative exclusions, this slide shows four items that make up the legislative exclusions of $14 million. The fifth item on this slide, depending on which way you're counting from, which is the Silver Line Phase 2 ramp-up cost, has no funding allocation at this time. Instead, staff will come back to the board for funding authorization once an operational date is determined. So using the subsidy formula that I just discussed on slide 14, this slide summarizes WMATA's total operating subsidy requirement for fiscal year 2020, which is $1.27 billion. That amount includes the FY 2019 base subsidy of $1.81 billion, the 3% base subsidy increase of $32 million, and the legislative excluded subsidy of $14 million. The final component on this slide, which is the new initiatives to grow ridership, will be funded by WMATA through internal efficiencies. But over the last 3 years, WMATA has improved operating efficiency by reducing staffing, closing underutilized offices, and reduced absenteeism, among other actions that have saved the agency $136 million. But that challenge remains. And in fact, in FY 2020, WMATA will be required to reduce costs by $47 million in order to balance the budget. And it will be difficult choices in order to achieve that without impacting safety or service. And as we have stated throughout the process, WMATA continues to face several headwinds related to its fiscal environment. For fiscal year 2020, the key issue for WMATA is prior reauthorization, which will help ensure that WMATA continues ongoing investments in safety and reliability improvements. The other risks to the budget include lack of a rainy day fund, continuing growth in ADA paratransit, as well as OPEB and pension liabilities. With that, staff recommends acceptance of the report on equity analysis and approval of the recommended budget for WMATA's 2020 fiscal year. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Anasike. Appreciate it very much. All right, so the discussion is now with the board. Folks, why don't we do this to make sure we go through a round of questions to make sure everyone understands where we are today. And, of course, there have been some conversations to, adjust things accordingly, which I'll offer through a floor amendment. But why don't we do questions first? And, of course, everyone on the board, no preference for committee members at this time. Mr. Smedberg.
Paul, Mr. Wiedefeld, give us a little update on PREA, if you could.
Sure. In the president's budget just released, he did have that for $150 million in there, so that's very, very good news to start off the conversation that way.
Yeah.
We continue to work on the Hill with both the local congressional delegation as well as some of the other larger players. And obviously they have a very strong interest in continuing that. Nothing has come forward yet in terms of, you know, specific language, but we anticipate that in the very near future.
But there is a possibility that the budget deliberation gets dragged out and there's no resolution, and so PREA would still be in question.
There's a possibility. Again, I think that with the administration coming out with $150 million in their budget,
out of the box,
obviously is a step in the right direction for us.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Price.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I have several questions, but unlike some of my colleagues, I'll just ask one question this round. Can you walk us through the reductions made to include the yellow and red line extensions within the 3% cap?
Thank you, Mr. Corbett. The, as you recall, the regional budget recommendation had four service proposals in it, including the extensions for the red line as well as the yellow line, in addition to the all 100% Aircat train, as well as the extension of the peak periods. Requiring about $20 million in additional subsidy. This recommendation drops two of those four proposals, the 100% ACAT train and the peak period extension, which reduces the overall cost to $10 million. And as I indicated in the presentation, will be absorbed by management through additional cost reduction efforts.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Goldman.
Thank you. Mr. Anasek, in your budget risk slide, your third bullet was the point further ridership declines. And I guess late last week, you issued, at least Vermont issued some updated statistics that have been the subject of some press reports during the week, that Metro Rail ridership for the six-month period, July 1 through December 31st of last year, has now declined below 600,000 midweek riders to a number of 595,000 riders. My question is, we just went through an exercise earlier approving the FY19 operating budget with an amendment. My question is, are your ridership projections and your revenue projections in now the amended budget for FY19 affected by this ridership decline, or did they anticipate that, or are there other changes on the expense side that you're planning to make so that the FY19 budget that we've just approved will finish the year as a balanced budget?
Thank you, Mr. Goldman. As you know, we look at ridership on a fairly regular basis. And as we have done in previous years, for FY19, we have monitored ridership monthly, in some cases weekly, and have made adjustments both in terms of our expectations, where we're going to end up with respect to ridership, as well as on cost to ensure that we have a balanced budget at the end of the current fiscal year. And with respect to FY20, the data that we've seen with respect to ridership has informed the recommendations that we used in developing the budget. And if you recall last November when we discussed the ridership projections at that point, we indicated to you that we were making assumptions, adjustments, consistent with what we saw with respect to ridership. Part of the elements that the general manager recommended in the FY20 budget recommendation were initiatives designed to address ridership. Obviously, the final recommendation of the two extensions that we just discussed reflect will result in additional ridership improvements, but overall, the FY2020 ridership assumptions we have is in line with the numbers that you saw out on the streets and the efforts that we've built into the budget to begin to grow ridership again, despite the activities that we're doing on this, in the field to improve reliability.
Yeah, I know for FY 2020, the budget that we're discussing now, you anticipate a ridership decline resulting partly from the platform reconstruction work and other work.
Correct.
Dealing with I-66, but I just wanted to take you back to the current fiscal year, FY19. And my real question is, the numbers for the first 6 months of this fiscal year seem to show ridership at a level of about 600,000 midweek riders. And so my question is, there something aberrational about that, where you expect a higher level of ridership for the second half of the year, January through June of this year, or are you expecting that ridership will continue at that pace at about 600,000, 595,000, 600,000 riders on an average daily basis?
We certainly expect better improvements in the second half of the year. As you recall, there were some anomalies during the first half, mm-hmm. including the federal shutdown.
Yeah.
So clearly, the WMATA typically does better in the second half of the year, and there's no reason to think otherwise this fiscal year.
So you would not anticipate a need for any adjustments, any further adjustments to the FY19 budget?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Thank you for surfacing that important line of questioning, Mr. Goldman. Any other questions? Mr. McMillan?
Just a quick clarification on this slide with the paratransit costs and ridership. Last time I asked the question, I thought while the cost per ride was rising, ridership was in fact flat or declining in recent years. Is that not the case, or has ridership utilization also been going up in recent years?
Actually, both of those facts have been going up.
Okay.
The cost has been going up higher than the ridership.
Yes, the cost per ride has been the more significant driver in cost growth. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Horner.
Thanks. Great presentation, as always. I noticed in the materials that the issuance of new debt of the agency is contemplated. Can you provide us now or at a later time the amount of gross indebtedness that would result from this proposal, and in view of the inconsistency of ridership figures, are you anticipating compression of coverage ratios for the agency's indebtedness that could affect credit rating agency in the out year, credit rating of the debt in the out years of the plan?
If I'm not mistaken, we're anticipating about $500 million in this fiscal cycle in terms of additional gross debt. But with respect to the coverage ratios, the answer is no. Primarily, the capital structure is changing. As we now know, we will be adding the dedicated funding resources to the capital structure, which actually provides a different repayment stream and therefore different coverage ratio expectations. All of the prior debts that the organization had were actually indirectly owned by the jurisdiction. The future debt that's contemplated here will all be owned by and exclusively for WMATA, and therefore will establish a new coverage ratio which is not tied to ridership and therefore not tied to revenue.
Thank you. Mr. Crawford.
Not so much a question, but more of a couple of comments. One, I'm pleased to see the investments, the capital improvements that are being planned that will have the potential of improving service, but also safety. So I'm pleased to see that the budget has that. I'm also very pleased to see that it appears that, if I'm reading this correctly, we were able to make some adjustments, build in some enhancements, but also stay within, essentially within the 3% with the exclusions. Am I correct in that assumption? So I compliment you on that. Just an observation to the board. Just concerned about the long-term effect. I'm comfortable with the idea of fiscal constraints. I'm just concerned about it, the effect, the long-term effects of 3% increases. Because I doubt whether 3% actually covers annual cost increases. So what the 3% does over a longer period of time is that it reduces the spending power of WMATA and could potentially put us in a bad situation in a few years, because while on the surface it looks like we have an increase, but in practice, when you look at true buying power, it may actually result in a reduced buying power. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you for that comment. And so at this time, just to put a little bit of focus and granularity on it, I'm going to offer an amendment which is going to operationalize some technical concerns that have surfaced since this original presentation, as well as a little bit of further work on what the particular allocations of subsidy would be. Oh, yeah, that's right. We haven't had a main motion on the floor yet. So at this time, it would be wonderfully in order if someone would make a main motion to adopt the FY 2020 operating budget and FY 2025 CIP. Thank you, Mr. McMillan. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Goldman. Before we get to discussion on the main motion, Everyone is being handed a copy of a series of amendments, and I'll walk them through with you. Really, you should focus your attention on the resolution, which operationalizes the motion. And with your indulgence, I'll walk you through exactly what it means. So first, does everyone have it?
Yeah.
I would like to move to amend the resolution, approval of the FY20 operating budget and capital budget and public participation report as follows. The sixth whereas clause would be deleted. Currently, that's the whereas clause in the resolution that says, whereas KIMSRA is the strategic plan that the board continues to endorse and is the basis for the FY20 operating budget and CIP. That would be deleted as a whereas clause. In substance, it would be replaced by a resolved clause, and this is the second component of the amendment. It would be adding the resolved clause with the language that you see in item number 2 on this document in front of you. Resolved that KIMSRA is the strategic plan that the board continues to endorse and is the basis for the FY20 operating budget and CIP. So giving it greater force by moving it to a resolved clause. Then the originally numbered 14th resolve clause, which reads currently that the board authorizes the GM, CEO, and CFO or their designee to leverage the dedicated funding, etc., that would be amended to be restated as follows. Resolved that the board authorizes the GM, CEO, and CFO or their designee to leverage the dedicated funding, including issuance of bonds, to maximize the use of funding for approved capital projects, and the GM CEO shall seek and obtain board approval prior to any obligation to close on a bond transaction. That would effectively add the assurance and consistency with regular practice that before going out to the market to close, to issue any bonds or close on any transactions, that the board has prior notice and approval authority. We would then have the further resolved clauses renumbered accordingly, which would then have the resolved clause that follows be resolved number 16, and then they would go through to 18 total resolved clauses. And 5, that we would revise the resolution to substitute the tables that were attached, named attachments B and C, for the existing attachments B and C. This is where the numbers come in, so at this point I think it would be appropriate to turn it back over to Mr. Anasike if we can get a second for this amendment to walk us through exactly what that means. So is there a second for this
second.
Amendment? Seconded by Mr. Smedberg. Mr. Anasike.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you start with attachment B, there are essentially two changes from the original document that was posted online, reducing services by $2.5 million and overall expenses by $2.5 million, consistent with the expectation of the motions that you're going to make with respect to the litigation expenses. That's the only change on that slide.
So that's the change to attachment,
attachment B.
Yes. Okay.
Accommodates the reduction expenses. With respect to attachment C, there are two fundamental changes to that attachment. If you start with a capped subsidy, which is the second column, right, those changes were driven by some additional information that we got late yesterday with respect to the Virginia subsidy allocations, so which relate to BOS, and which our understanding is that the split between the Arlington County, Fairfax County, and City of Falls Church needed to be adjusted, and this reflects those adjustments. With respect to the third column, which is FY 2020 legislative exclusions, the aggregate change in that column is a reduction of $2.5 million, again, consistent with the change that I just described in attachment B. Those are the only changes that needs to be identified.
Thank you, Mr. Anasike. And we'll move to the motion has been made and seconded to include this amendment. Mr. Smedberg.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Anasike, FY 2020 capped, just a point of information, when you say or when you use the word capped, does that mean 3%?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to make sure that thank you.
Yep. All right. So operationally, what we're looking at here today with the amendments, just to make sure everyone is clear, the first amendment is something that is largely of interest to Virginia and dedicated funding and making sure it's clearly recognized that WMATA is operating under a current strategic plan. The second one is just to codify current practice in terms of having the board review the issuances of bonds. And then the changes that we would be pursuing relative to what we have seen before, the litigation exclusions number, which is currently at $5 million, has been reduced to $2.5 million and then allocated among the jurisdictions accordingly. And then we have some very recent changes to bus allocations, and that's going to lead to my first question. Given that this is a very late, like within the last 24 hours, kind of relook at things, there will probably be the need for further analysis just to make sure these numbers are exactly correct. What do you see as the process for working through that between now and the 28th of final adoption? And is there an opportunity, will there be an opportunity for further refinement of the numbers on attachment C with a closer look by multiple parties?
Mr. Chairman, the answer is yes. Obviously, we'll prefer an approval today with future opportunities to clarify and modify those numbers as the committee sees fit.
Okay.
Yes. The scale is not as significant. So it's about $2 million overall.
Right.
So what we're looking for is the ability to at least advance some aspects of the budget, particularly with respect to grant applications.
Right. So, the envelope has not changed. It's just within that numbers may be adjusted, and that and there will be an opportunity for further engagement so that everyone understands and is comfortable with that the numbers are correct. Great. Mr. Price, and then Mr. Goldman.
My question is, why are we reducing the litigation component to this?
And so I can address
what has
that.
Our run rate thus far?
Well, you want to address the run rate question, and then I'll address why, or do you want to me address that first? So in the process of working together to build consensus on this budget, Mr. Price, since the litigation exclusions is very new to the WMATA funding regime, not everyone had the same interpretation as WMATA management as to what should be excluded. We didn't find a way to resolve that fully in terms of everyone having the same understanding. So there was a good faith effort on the part of management to work with the jurisdiction so that we could reduce that to a number that made everybody comfortable.
Yeah, but the real key is what's the run rate? That dictates whether or not that's a reasonable approach to reducing the litigation component in the budget.
We're not reducing it. It's just that we're not charging the local jurisdictions.
Okay.
So we'll still have to meet it internally.
What's the run rate?
It was in the $5 million range.
Okay. It's in the $5 million range?
Right. Management proposed $5 million for the litigation exclusions.
Right.
However, management's interpretation was not consistent with every jurisdiction's interpretation. So as a way to resolve that uncertainty, management is choosing to not exclude $2.5 million of what they originally proposed as a $5 million exclusion.
Is that under duress or what?
Again, we're all going through.
Basically, he's got this reasoning. It doesn't make any sense. But go ahead. Explain it to me.
I went to a state university.
Sure.
As a rower.
That's right.
Yeah, as a rower. I came in the back door. Go ahead.
There's legislation in Maryland. There's legislation in Virginia around this issue, and they're not quite the same. So we interpreted it one way. And within the region, there's some other interpretations of it. So rather than, again, to get to a point where we can move forward, in effect, we will eat $2.5 million internally and figure out how to fund that. We're not going to back away from what we need to do on the legal side. And the other $2.5 million is coming from the local jurisdictions as an exclusion.
I'll make one more statement, and I'll leave it alone at this point. You can't eat anything given your budget restraints that you currently have. I mean, you know, so I don't find that response acceptable.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Price. Mr. Goldman?
Yes, just 2 points on this, and I know Mr. Horner has a question on another issue. But this was a big concern in Maryland as to whether these litigation costs were properly included as an element subject to the legislative exclusion. We have guidance from our Assistant Attorney General to the effect, and I just want to read you, to include salary or administrative expenses of running a general counsel's office under this exclusion is a stretch, to say the least. The majority of courts would not agree with WMATA's interpretation of this legislative exclusion and would likely find that these exclusions, by their very nature, are to be used in extraordinary situations that would not be reasonably contemplated by WMATA in preparation of its budget. So while we have a big issue in principle, the total amount of $5 million in a $2 billion operating budget is very small. So in the interest of moving forward today, we agree with the compromise suggested by staff and the chair to just reflect half of that amount in the budget for this year.
Thank you, Mr. Gold.
I do have one more statement.
Sure.
In the calculations, at least the difference here seems to be the difference for Maryland between $432 million and $431 million and some change. And at least when Maryland had made these calculations earlier, they had concluded that the impact of the change would be a little greater. And so I just want to make sure that we have some way to be able to come back at these numbers if there's a mathematical error or the computation is incorrect to corrected between now and the end of the month.
So as we determine with the internal allocations to Virginia, those broad allocations will also be subject to further scrubbing so that when we approve a budget on the 28th, we'll have something that at least everyone has had a chance to look at, so that holds true. And to address Mr. Price, you know, I understand your concern, sir. I think when you deal with a lot of the changes that we've had this year and you get differing interpretations, it's not unreasonable that you would have some growing pains a little bit. I would fully expect that by next year there is complete understanding of what should be excluded and what constitutes exclusions that come from Virginia, Maryland, the district, and WMATA. So consider this, I think, a one-year learning curve, but next year we should not be having this conversation. That would at least be my opinion. Mr. Horner.
Thank you. I have a question about item 3 of the amendment, just to understand the underlying concern, and specifically the concern underlying the last clause of this resolution that reads, the GM shall not seek and obtain board approval prior to any obligation to close on a bond transaction. Is the objective of this language to prevent bypass of the 3% cap on growth and contribution to operating subsidy by issuing debt in lieu of grant funding? Do you follow that? Meaning, in lieu of requiring additional operating subsidy above the 3% cap on growth, there is a possibility that the agency can incur additional indebtedness to pay for a larger operating budget. Is the intent of this clause to confirm that the decision to take that step resides with the board?
Not directly, but broadly, yes. It's to ensure that it wasn't necessarily to deal with a certain amount of funding obligation, but really to be consistent with past practice here at WMATA and really what most organizations, governmental organizations, deal with before actually pursuing and closing on a transaction. There is a governing body review and authorization, so that's really the primary intent. Okay. But your scenario is baked into that.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Any other questions? Mr. Evans.
Thank you. For those looking at these charts, on the operating requirements chart, the total number in the far right bottom corner is the jurisdictional operating subsidy of $1.196 billion. And on the other chart, under subsidized, in the first column, if you go all the way to the bottom, net subsidy is $1.124 billion. So can, Dennis, can you explain the difference between those two numbers?
Yes, sir. If you go back, Mr. Chairman, to attachment C, which is the operating requirements chart, and look at the fourth column, total FY 2020 subsidy, here. You see at the very bottom total contribution of 1.124714, which is the same number that you
right.
have on the previous slide. Right. The difference is that, as I mentioned earlier, we also issued debt on behalf of some of the jurisdictions, and next year the debt service for those debt is outstanding is $72 million, which takes it to the 1.96.
Right. And how does that affect everything, the debt service? What does that actually mean for someone who's just looking at this for the first time? What does that mean?
It means that just like our mortgages at home, every month, and in this case every year, you're paying your mortgage. This is what matters, or the region's mortgage on behalf of the debt that we issued on their behalf. And so they have to provide that amount as part of the capital funding agreement in addition to whatever operator requirements that are required for Metro on a yearly basis.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Are we now ready to move to a vote on the amendment? I think we are. So it's been moved and seconded. No, any further discussion? Ready for a vote? All those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The ayes have it. This amendment is now integral to the main motion to approve the FY 2020 budget and 2025 CIP. Any further discussion on the main motion? Mr. Goldman.
Thank you. With those changes, Mr. Chairman, at least for Maryland, we can now support this budget as it provides valuable new service benefits for the traveling public, and it limits the subsidy increase for Maryland to roughly about 4.3%. Maryland's share will be, as noted in the attachment C, about $431 million, which is the largest among the three jurisdictions. But that's still about a 10-plus increase over the budget that this committee and this board approved last year for the FY19 budget. And as was explained earlier, there were post-approval increases for the FY19 budget, reflecting the local 689 wage increase and increase in metro access costs in FY19. The service improvements are very valuable here, and I think they reflect a very good down payment on the range of service improvements that the general manager's initial budget proposed for this year, and I'm hopeful that we will be able to come back and authorize most of those other service improvements next year. For East Side riders on the Red Line, it means an end to those turnbacks, which will double rush hour trains north of Silver Spring, serving the three stations north thereof, Wheaton, Forest Glen, and Glenmont. And the extension of Red Line trains, Yellow Line trains, I'm sorry, to Greenbelt will provide more capacity on the Yellow Line, and it will provide the first one-ride trains to Virginia all day long. So it's going to be a one-ride train from Greenbelt to such places such as Reagan Airport and places beyond on the Yellow Line in Virginia, which are great service benefits. As I've said, one area of our concern was the budget's treatment of litigation costs as a legitimate budget exclusion, which Maryland strongly disagrees. And the amendment we've adopted removes that, at least a good part of it, for this year. But I would just say that while we've given staff a semi-pass on this year, we won't accept that next year for FY21. If this kind of questionable legislative exclusion appears over the 3% cap, it'll be vigorously opposed by Maryland in the budget next year. I still have some concerns with our general fare box recovery rates, which I think is out of line with Transit Properties nationally based on recent national transit database numbers for 2017. Our fare box recovery rate, which is about 35%, that's what the rider actually pays, is below that of New York at 55%, Boston at 43%, Chicago CTA at 40%, and just above Philadelphia SEPTA. So I think we need to do a better job on our fare box recovery rate. And this decline in fare box recovery, which has been going on consistently for the last 4 or 5 years, suggests to me that WMATA is either offering more capacity than riders are using, a low seat factor, or we're not raising fares, keeping up with cost increase, or probably a little of both. And I think, as well, we're not following another good industry best practice, which is avoiding consideration of regular and periodic fare increases, however undesirable that may be. But those are fare increases that are needed and higher operating costs, as we've experienced this year in terms of the local 689 wage increase in settlements. So I think as we go forward, there needs to be a better balance between what riders pay, the level of service provided, the jumpstart ridership growth, which I think is something we should focus on, and what jurisdictions are called upon to pay in higher subsidies. And let me close by saying that this is a discussion that I think we will re-engage in next year as we take up the FY 2021 budget.
Thank you. So I do, before we get to concluding statements, which Mr. Goldman has started us on, I do want to note that with the number of new initiatives that were offered and sent out to the public for comment and review, we've gotten some comments and feedback from our Riders Advisory Council. You have copies of that in front of you. And they have essentially prioritized what they believe are the most important cost-effective and ridership-inducing changes that we can make in this budget. It's largely consistent, actually, with what we have before us today. However, one of the ways in which the public participation process, perhaps maybe surfaced a different level of priority was with the weekend flat fare, which is something that is not included in this budget, even though I know it's of great interest to a lot of people. primarily designed to wanting to increase ridership on the weekends. So there's one way you can do that through your fares. There's another way that you can do that through your service. So I just wanted to hear some thoughts from management as to what we could look at in the year ahead to deliver a better weekend experience for riders to, you know, grow some demand, grow some ridership there.
What we are doing is I've asked for a sort of rethinking and some analysis of the approach we've been taking on weekends, particularly to make sure that if we are going to hit a particular portion of the system, that we only hit very small portions of it, and the rest of the system runs, at scheduled, at public schedule, basically. And I think that's huge, because right now we tend to hit different parts of the system, which then impacts those, like this weekend, for instance. I know that we have a very tough weekend in front of us. But we also, like with the Cherry Blossom Festival, you know, we've just announced that we won't be doing any weekend service. So we need to do more opportunities like that. So I understand that, and we want to get there as quick as we can. But I want to do it in the context of the type of work we have in front of us, and how do we do that? How do we fit that work in as we change those schedules? So you will be hearing in the near future with some plans on that to do that.
I think we look very much forward to that, because that's something that's important, I think, to everybody, is trying to figure out how we make our system more efficient by bringing people there on the weekend, and whether it's looking at more opportunities to do what we do during Cherry Blossom or having other ways of promoting when, you know, you're going to ride on the weekend, you're going to get a great experience. I think that's really important for us to do. Any other comments, Mr. Price?
The representative from the great state of Maryland, I want to unpackage some of your comments. The thing that scared me most is that, are you saying that Maryland wanted to see a fare increase? I just want to understand some of the things you said. You want your residents to have a fare increase?
I think we need a robust discussion of revenue and how we increase revenue, because I find it personally troubling that the amount that we're getting from the fare box from the rider seems to be declining precipitously over the last 4 or 5 years, and it's now below that of other transit properties that we consider our peers. So I think we have that.
So these are your comments or the state of Maryland's comments?
These are mine.
Okay. Oh, okay. Thank you.
All right. I'll make hopefully what will be a brief concluding comment. You know, when you look at this budget, it doesn't reflect like usually any budgets when there are constraints and trade-offs to be made. It doesn't reflect everything that everybody would want. And in that case, I think it's probably indicative that it's a fair budget. When people look at it, they may likely see that the rail extensions that are in here, because they terminate in Maryland, primarily benefit Maryland. I want to just say for the record that Virginia doesn't view it that way. These are core improvements that do improve the experience for everybody who rides Metro. And, Mr. Goldman, your example of a one seat between Greenbelt and the extension or at the end of the yellow line in Virginia is an important thing for mobility for Virginians. And this will improve, I think, ridership overall. It will certainly improve the experience in the core, which will benefit people in the district. We should move beyond looking at these as a Maryland thing or a Virginia thing. This is a case where we can improve the system overall, and I think that's an important step for WMATA, even in these financially tough times. That said, as we move towards the future, I mean, the goals for us are really clear. We've had this conversation this year about safety over service, and I actually had a constituent who wrote in who made me think about it in a slightly different way, and I think it'd be important for us to do so as well. It's service delivers safety. You know, let's remember that at the core, we're a transit agency. We want people in transit because that's certainly safer than automobile travel. So the challenge for us as we move forward, certainly we want to make Metro as safe as it possibly can be for everybody who's on it, but that doesn't take us away from our focus to seeing how we can expand service to the greatest extent possible, because that is for the overall public good. I know we all get it, but it's just important for us to remind ourselves of that from time to time. I do apologize that this year was very messy when it comes to figuring out the legislative exclusions and capital funding. It's a steep learning curve for all of us adjusting to the new regime of how Metro is funded. But overall, this is a better benefit to the organization, because Metro now has much more flexibility and capacity that it has had previously. That's a good thing. However, there's going to be some impacts in the near term which are really difficult for jurisdictions to handle, so we appreciate WMATA working with us to make sure the numbers are absolutely correct because, you know, we've had the mantra of 3% for a couple of years, and as we all know, nobody's paying just 3% more. So thank you all for your indulgence in working through it, and I congratulate and commend everybody for giving a little at various steps, giving up what they would have ideally wanted to get us to a reasonable budget that has broad consensus. Any other comments? Mr. Evans, Chair Evans.
Thank you, Mr. Dorsey, and I want to take this opportunity for initially for thanking you as the head of the Finance Committee and the head of the budget. You did a superb job this year in a very challenging and difficult environment. So thank you for all of your efforts, your hard work. You're reaching out to all the jurisdictions, and it's not easy bringing all the parties together in a compromise. And so your political skills as well as your knowledge have come to fruit here. So
thank
you very much. And for everyone on the board as well, thank you all for compromising and getting us to a place where we can move forward with this budget. From the district, just a couple of comments. Certainly one of the disappointments for the district is the late night service. I cast a very, very, very difficult vote to keep us where we are, something that was and continues to be very unpopular in the District of Columbia. So next year when we are looking at the late night service, there will have to be changes. I don't know what they will be. We will discuss those with the general manager as we go forward. But it is unacceptable to the district to close at 11:30 at night and 1 o'clock on Friday and Saturday. I was willing to do it this year. I recognize the situation Metro's in, but we will have to look at that going forward next year. On a big picture, I continue to be enormously concerned about our unfunded liabilities, which are now $3 billion and climbing. We are kind of addressing them, but kind of not. In this budget. It's someday, somewhere, somehow, somebody's going to have to pay that bill. It will be us. It will be those who follow us. It will be those who follow those people. But someday that bill is going to come due. And so I would hope in the ensuing year ahead of us, we come up with a some kind of a plan to help address that, because that is probably one of the biggest things that could sink us going forward. And finally, on ridership, and this is my view, and maybe the district's view, and you've heard me say this, but I'll repeat it. I don't view Metro as a business. I view it as a necessity for people in my jurisdiction, many at the low end of the income scale. Metro is critical to their life, whether it's the trains or the buses. It's the only way they can get around, that they can get to their jobs or back to their homes. Metro is expensive. Maybe in the district, not as much, but in the suburban jurisdictions, it is very expensive. And it is not convenient. There are many places we can't get to because of the constant construction that we're doing because we were left with a mess after 15 years of neglect. It doesn't run all the time and with the efficiencies that we would like it. So I differ with those who say we have to hold down the cost because this is a business and we need to make more money. I differ with that. If it were up to me and I were king, I would say that we should have a flat fare of a dollar. You could ride anywhere in this region for a dollar, and that it should be available, and it should run as much as we can. Because it's going to be critical to the future of this region that this system work as we add hundreds of thousands of people over the years. With the advent of Amazon, we're going to have many, many more people in this region. And already we are so congested on the streets that it's not possible to get around. So going forward, that is a robust discussion I hope we do have. Is what are we? Are we a business? Are we a commuter system that gets people into the city and takes them home at night? Are we a weekend system that is in a robust city and robust region like ours that is not the city of 20 years ago, that is exciting with lots of people utilizing us? And if that's the case, who pays for all this and how does it all work? And so that's the robust discussion we're going to have going forward. But for today, Mr. Dorsey, good job. So, because sometimes in the short term, you got to get to where you're trying to go, and I believe we have gotten there. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. Mr. Smedberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to say very briefly, I think this budget reflects just sort of the practical reality of things where we stand right now and the issues that we have to address. And appreciate, as Christian said earlier, management and staff willing to work with the jurisdictions through this period of change. You know, I think that's really important, particularly, you know, from our side, from the Virginia side, with where we have so many parties involved. So appreciate that and want to thank the committee for its work and particularly Christian for your leadership getting us through this to a rather anticlimactic end.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Price.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, I would like to thank you for your leadership in guiding us through this very difficult period of time with our budget. You demonstrated diplomatic skills, and I see why you're an elected official and a very effective one at that. So I want to personally thank you for your leadership in this process.
Thank you. My only hope is that people say such things about me when I'm dead. All right. Thank you.
Thanks to election time, right?
For example, if I could vote for you, I would vote for you.
The voters.
Hey, Christian, if I could vote for you, I would vote for you.
You can have multiple homes. All right. Wonderful. Well, let's not take advantage of this great place that we're in. I think we're ready for a vote on the FY20 budget and 2025 CIP. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it unanimously. Thank you all very, very much. With no further business to come before the committee, we are going to stand adjourned, and I'll now turn the floor over to Mr. Evans, who would like to convene the board in executive session.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Dorsey, and I would like to make a request for executive session. I move the following in accordance with the bylaws. I, Jack Evans, request that the Board of Directors convene an executive session to discuss the following matters pursuant to Article 2, Paragraph 9, Subsection G, disposition of WMATA property or acquisition of real property for WMATA purposes, where discussion in public would adversely affect WMATA's negotiating or bargaining position. I'd like to move at this time. Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion. Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. We'll see everybody upstairs. Meeting's adjourned.